Chapter 2. It's yet another rainy evening in November, and Andy is grumpy and taking it out on everyone else. Quinn's been in Geneva all week for work, Nikki explains to Joe sotto voce. While Andy clatters around behind the bar, Andy gets antsy when she's gone for more than a couple of days. She'll be back Sunday, though, God willing. Inshallah, Joe agrees, wincing as Andy snipes at Booker about who knows what. Is Lycan off tonight, too? No, he's just very, very late, Andy grumbles, shoving Joe's drink in his general direction, because that's just what I needed right now, especially on Celeste's night off. Celeste is her assistant manager, a level-headed young woman who has an admirable talent for getting drunks to reconsider all their life choices. Nikki likes Celeste. The phone behind the bar rings, and Andy throws up her hands with a stream of curses before going to answer it. Niall shifts awkwardly on her stool. You know, I used to tend bar in college. I could help. It's a slow night so far, Booker sighs, so hopefully that won't be necessary. But when Andy gets off the phone, she's white-faced. I need to go. Fuck. Book, I don't know. What is it? What happened? Booker asks. I can run the bar. Don't worry about it. Is it Quinn? Nikki's heart stops at the implication. He reaches out to grab at Niall's hand, unthinking. Not Quinn, Andy says. Before Nikki has a chance to breathe out again, she goes on. It's Lycan. I'm his emergency contact. There's been an accident. I need to get to the hospital. Joe is up and moving at once. I'll go call you a taxi. At Andy's nod, he grabs his jacket and heads out into the night, mobile in hand. For possibly the first time in her life, Andy hesitates, wavering. I need to... Come on, let's get your things from your office, Nikki tells her, taking her arm gently. I will go with you. Booker can run the guard tonight. He's done it before. She squeezes her eyes shut for a moment, and when she opens them, a little of the old Andy is back. Yeah, thanks. They fetch her jacket and purse from the office, Andy moving forward mechanically throughout. When they emerge again, Niall has joined Booker behind the bar, already mixing drinks for patrons. She gives Nikki a brisk nod and waves them on. We got this. Go. Outside, the rain has lightened into more of a heavy mist. Joe has a cab waiting at the curb for them, and without anyone discussing it, he follows Nikki and Andy into the back seat. Andy gives the driver the name of the hospital, then doesn't say another word for the rest of the ride. Nikki wraps his arm around her shoulders. She leans into him just a fraction, and he hopes it's better than nothing. Joe is quiet and calm at his other side. When they get to the hospital, Joe handles the fare while Andy runs in, Nikki just behind her. Inside, she's all business, demanding information, and not taking no for an answer until they find someone who knows about Lycan. It was an accident. In the darkness and the rain, a driver had made a turn without looking while Lycan was crossing the road, probably rushing, already late for his shift at the guard. Just a stupid accident. He's in surgery now. They're shown to a waiting area with hard plastic chairs and horrible fluorescent lighting, and nothing much happens for a long time. Do you want to call Quinn? Nikki asks quietly. Or would you like me to? Andy shakes her head stiffly. No, not yet. Not until we know more. It'll just worry her and she'll stress out about trying to get her flights changed and... No. She would want to be here for Lycan and for you. Not until we know more, Andy says again, and Nikki lets it go. After a time, Joe asks if they'd like him to find coffee. Andy shrugs, twisting her hands in her lap, but Nikki gives him a nod, trying to convey his gratitude just with his eyes. Some of it must come through, because a flicker of a smile tugs at Joe's mouth for a moment. When he returns with three steaming cups, Nikki nudges Andy gently until she accepts one. She doesn't really acknowledge it otherwise, but at least it would keep her hands warm. Thank you, Nikki tells Joe softly, trying to smile. It doesn't quite take. The hospital coffee is unsurprisingly terrible, but it helps. Out of the corner of his eye, he can see Andy take an absent sip of hers, grimace, then sip it again. After what must be hours, a doctor comes to find them and asks if they're Lycan's family. "I'm his legal next of kin," Andy says firmly, standing. "How is he?" The surgery on his leg went well, the doctor thinks. No internal injuries from what he could see. Lycan is sleeping now, but they can allow one visitor in to see him. There's no question that Andy will go. She drops the empty cup in a bin and follows the doctor out of the waiting room. Nikki does his best to find a more comfortable position in the hard chair, settling in for a long night, then looks over at Joe, who is doing much the same in the seat beside him. "You don't have to stay. Thank you so much for everything you've done for us tonight. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, but it will just be more hours of sitting now. You should go home." Joe looks at him, eyebrows raised. "Are you staying?" "Of course," Nikki says simply. "Someone needs to be here for Andy." "That's what I thought. Then I'm staying too." Joe reaches out to rub Nikki's back, his hand warm and soothing between his shoulder blades. When he pulls away, he doesn't go far, letting his arm drape lightly across the back of Nikki's chair. "Someone should be here for you, too." Nikki nods and doesn't protest further. It's strangely comforting just having him here, a calm, reassuring presence. "How did Andy wind up as Lycan's next of kin?" Joe asks, tone low and gentle. "She took him in when he was a teenager," Nikki says. "His parents kicked him out for, you know, being gay." "Yeah. I don't know the full story. It was long before I came to London, and he doesn't like talking about it. Andy and Quinn gave him a home for a time until he could get his feet back under him and gave him the job at the Guard. He's working his way through a social work degree now. Did you know?" Joe shakes his head, looking pensive. "No, I didn't. I never really spoke to him much beyond, you know, small talk. I didn't want to be bothering him while he was working." "Yeah," Nikki sighs. "I don't know him as well as I should either. Not much of a friend, am I?" "Don't say that." Joe tugs him into a sort of sideways hug, arm tightening around Nikki's waist. "Nikki, you're a wonderful friend. I'm so glad I met you, and I'm sure Lycan is too." Nikki swallows and drops his head onto Joe's shoulder. Just for a minute, he tells himself. It's been a very stressful evening. He can permit himself this one indulgence. That minute passes, then a few more. He can't quite bring himself to move away, but Joe doesn't seem to mind, so that's okay. It's a long night. Fortunately, Lycan is expected to make a full recovery, though it'll be several months before he's back on his feet. In the meantime, Andy hires one of Niall's flatmates as an additional bartender. "Wait, didn't you used to date her?" Nikki does ask. He distinctly remembers some low-key drama to that effect around the holidays last year. "Does he?" Niall shrugs. "Yeah, for a while. But we're cool now. Her new girlfriend, Jay, is awesome." Joe tilts his head to one side, brows furrowed. "You're still flatmates with your ex? A year later?" "Her girlfriend lives with us, too," Niall assures him. "It's all good. Rent in London is expensive, you know? We've got a sweet place in a decent neighborhood. No way would I give that up." Nikki and Joe exchange baffled looks. Booker snorts into his pint. "Lesbians," he mutters. They drop the topic for the evening, but on the tube home it comes up again. "Like, I'm still on decent terms with most of my exes," Joe says, gesticulating a bit more broadly than usual, "but I would not want to live with any of them." Nikki chuckles. "I do not have many exes to speak of, but I didn't really want to live with any of them even before we were dating, which, come to think of it, is probably why those relationships ended." "Usually a good sign, yeah," Joe agrees. "I tend to have the opposite problem." At Nikki's inquiring look, he shrugs ruefully. "I jump into things too quickly, fall in love too easily. It's how I wound up in the UK, actually. My boyfriend got a job here, and I followed him. And then we broke up 2 months later, which really anyone could have told me was what would happen. My mother certainly did. But I get caught up in the romance of it all, and here we are. Christ, Nikki thinks. No wonder he'd been so gun-shy at Pride. Fresh out of a relationship like that, of course Joe was only looking for friendship. Of course he'd flinched away from Nikki's obvious interest. That must have been difficult, he says softly. Joe shrugs again. Mostly just embarrassing and lonely. I hadn't realized that most of our friends were really his friends until... Yeah. Fortunately, by then I'd joined the gallery and was on my final interview for this job, so I decided to stay here anyway. Better than slinking back home with my tail between my legs, you know? I can understand that. I'm sorry he hurt you and put you in that position. But for what it's worth, I don't think that falling in love easily is something you should ever be embarrassed about. It just means you have a big heart, and there's nothing wrong with that. Nikki nudges Joe's shoulder lightly with his own, and I'm definitely not sorry that it brought you to London. Joe doesn't exactly smile, but it's in his eyes all the same. Thanks, Nikki. The holidays are a melancholy time for Nikki. He's not a Grinch about it. He certainly doesn't want to spoil anyone else's fun, but he hasn't been able to get into the spirit of the season since leaving the church. For him, Christmas had always been about family and faith, and he doesn't really have either anymore. So, yeah. The guard certainly doesn't shut down for the holidays, but it does change in subtle ways. More out-of-towners, fewer regulars. Andy and Quinn usually take a week off around Christmas to visit Quinn's family in Manchester, leaving Celeste in charge of the pub. Booker is more aggressively depressed over the holidays than Nikki, and while Nikki doesn't mind indulging his misanthropy, he'd rather not wallow to quite that extent this year. That being said, tradition is tradition, so the Friday before Christmas finds the pair of them alone at the bar, doing shots while Celeste and Dizzy ignore them both. He's genuinely surprised when Joe shows up later in the evening. Joe! You weren't in the office today. I assumed you were away for the holiday. I did take a few days off, but mostly because I'd lose the vacation time if I didn't use it, Joe says. I'm flying home to see family for New Year's instead. Still, I figured you'd be here tonight. Niall already back in the States? Yeah, she flew out yesterday. Nikki eyes his shot glass, decides he's had more than enough for the moment, and pushes it down the bar to Joe. Join us? Joe sniffs it, then grimaces and sets it back down untouched. In fairness, he never joins them for shots. What the fuck are you drinking? Shoe polish, probably, Booker mutters. Whatever gets the job done, right? Joe exchanges a look with Nikki, who gives him a rueful shrug. I'm keeping an eye on him, I promise. They wind up pouring Booker into a cab about half an hour later. And by then, Nikki is more than ready to call it a night himself, even though it's relatively early. Sorry you came out just for that, he tells Joe as they wait for the tube. I would have warned you off if I'd known. I've had worse nights, honestly. Joe glances at him sidelong. Booker usually holds his liquor better than that. Nikki shoves his hands deep in his pockets. He only gets truly drunk on special occasions. Christmas... his son's birthday. He has a kid? Ah, shit, Nikki sighs. I forgot you wouldn't know. It feels like you've been part of the group for much longer. Yeah, Book used to be married. They had a son. He died young, leukemia, and his marriage ended not long after. His mouth twists. Not many marriages survive the death of a child, in my experience. I can't imagine anything more difficult to endure. That's awful, Joe says quietly. Will he be upset that you told me? Nikki considers it, wishing he were more sober himself. No, I don't think so. He doesn't like to talk about it, but it has never been a secret. And you're our friend, Joe. Better you should know rather than stumble upon it all unthinking. He gives Joe a faint smile. So that's why he enjoys the holiday even less than I do. The least I can do is keep him company while he drinks. When the train arrives, the car is crowded, so they're quiet for a few stops. Their shoulders bump every time the train sways. Eventually, Joe asks, "So why don't you like Christmas then?" "I mean, I obviously don't celebrate, but I can still appreciate the festive spirit, aside from the aggressively awful music in the shops." "I like Christmas just fine, in the abstract," Nikki says slowly. "But it is complicated to find yourself on the outside of something you were once a part of. I should find new ways to celebrate, I suppose, but that just rings hollow to me." He could say more, perhaps, but someone stumbles against him and he lets it go. He has a headache building in the base of his skull and doesn't particularly feel like having this conversation on a crowded train. He spends the rest of the ride lost in his own thoughts, only vaguely aware of Joe beside him, and bids him a distracted goodnight when they reach his station. Around noon, on Christmas Day, while Nikki is having a lie-in and very much not moping, thank you, his phone buzzes with a text from Joe. "Up for company? I won't be offended if you say no." The corner of Nikki's mouth twitches a little in spite of himself. "What did you have in mind?" "Well, we have this random day off, you see, so I thought I might play tourist. You're welcome to join me." "As long as it doesn't involve the eye, sure." "Oh, ye of little faith, wear comfortable shoes and a warm jacket." The weather today is not too bad for late December, chilly and cloudy, of course, but no wind or rain. So for the standards of London winter, it's practically balmy. He takes the tube to Little Venice, a charming area on the junction of three canals with gardens and brightly colored houseboats. Nikki's never even heard of it before, though it's not far from more touristy districts. He finds Joe on a bench along the basin, sketchbook open in his lap. When he catches sight of Nikki, he grins and finishes up whatever he's working on, tucking the pad under his arm as he stands to meet him. "I've heard there's a decent walk along the canal from here up to Regent's Park if you're up for it," Joe says. He's wearing a bright blue scarf that looks incredibly soft. Nikki kind of wants to tangle his hands in it. "That would be nice." He would agree to just about anything Joe suggested right now, but it really does sound like a pleasant walk. It feels good to stretch his legs a bit. He's inclined toward indolence in the winter, but once given an excuse, it's nice to leave his flat occasionally. They follow the canal along tree-lined streets with pretty Regency-style houses. Nikki finds the brightly colored boats far more interesting than the architecture, and Joe launches into a comparison between this and the canals in Amsterdam, where Nikki has never been. He has been to the real Venice, though, several times, which looks absolutely nothing like this, and that leads them into a more generalized conversation about places they've traveled before and where they'd like to visit someday. Before Nikki quite realizes it, they're already at the park. There's a large mosque right at the entrance to the park with a beautiful dome that glitters gold against the flat gray sky. That and the minaret are about all Nikki can see of it from the canal, and only because the trees are bare of leaves. "I've been inside. It's nice," Joe says, though he makes no move to veer off their current path. "My mother insisted on it when she visited, even though it's not exactly in our neighborhood." "Ah, well, I try to be more observant when she's around. It pleases her." "You've never spoken much about your faith," Nikki says quietly. "The English seem to think it's rude to bring up religion in mixed company, so I generally refrain." Joe glances at him sidelong as they walk. "You don't mention yours either." "I suppose I no longer have any faith to speak of." "That sounds like a story in itself. But it's all right if you'd rather not discuss it." Joe keeps his tone light, which Nikki appreciates. "For me, I've definitely lapsed as I've gotten older. I don't abstain from alcohol, as you probably noticed, though I try not to overindulge. But my faith is still a part of me. Even if I'm not a very good Muslim, it's a huge part of my culture and how I was raised, you know?" "Of course. It shaped the man you have become." Joe gives him another oblique look, and Nikki shoves his hands deeper into his coat pockets. They stop at a bench to sit for a bit. Joe opens his sketchbook again, flipping to a fresh page. On the other side, Nikki can see the boat basin where they began, lovingly rendered in shades of gray. That's beautiful. It's a start, Joe says, already focused on the next sketch, outlining the curve of the canal, the barren trees, the stately columns of a house of some kind that's nestled into the park grounds. I'm trying to pull together a new series of prints for the gallery. That's what tends to actually sell there. Smaller things, jewelry or cards or the like, and cheaper art prints. You know, touristy art that you can pop in a frame and hang in the loo. Nikki huffs out a laugh. I'm sure your sketches would be wonderful to stare at over the toilet. Joe grins. You bet. Anyway, I figured it would be an easy way to earn a few more quid, but I'm sick of all the usual crap. The Tower of London, the Eye, Westminster, Big Ben. That stuff's ubiquitous. So I thought I'd look for places off the beaten track, the parts of London you don't always see. Thank you for inviting me along, then, Nikki says, meaning it. I've lived in this city for 3 years now, and I've never been here before. To the park itself, yes, but not this part of it. It's quieter here. I like it. So do I. They sit for a few minutes more, silence only broken by the scratch of Joe's pencil across the page and the distant sound of traffic. Nikki allows himself to get distracted by the flex of Joe's fingers around the pencil, the elegant shapes of his hands. Watching the landscape slowly unfold across the page is oddly soothing. He's almost managed to forget that it's Christmas. I was in seminary, he says quietly, not sure quite where the words are coming from, but somehow it's important that Joe know this. I would have been ordained as a priest by now, probably, if I had stayed. Joe's hand stills for a moment, then resumes sketching. What changed your mind? Nikki shrugs, even though he knows Joe isn't looking at him. He doesn't think he'd be able to talk about it if Joe was. Coming to terms with my own sexuality was part of it. But really, there was no one thing. Not like a light switching off, more like it gradually grew dimmer and dimmer until I realized I could no longer see a way forward. Not without folding myself into somebody who no longer allowed any part of myself to peer through. At all. He inhales slowly, staring out at the still waters of the canal, then breathes out again. My parents did not approve, of course, to put it mildly. Do you still have any kind of relationship with them? Joe asks, so very gently. Not as such. They made it clear that I would be allowed home once I was ready to put this lifestyle behind me. So I suppose we're at an impasse. I'm sorry. Don't be. They made their choice and I made mine. Nikki gets to his feet, a restless energy thrumming under his skin, demanding that he move. Without commenting, Joe flips his book shut and follows him. I'm sorry, I did not mean to interrupt. No, it's okay. I already have what I need for now. Shall we? They continue onward, Joe smoothly shifting the conversation back to lighter topics, and Nikki lets himself shake off his momentary moodiness. There are a few other points where Joe stops them so that he can sketch for a few minutes. Though it's starting to get colder, Nikki doesn't mind. Eventually, they follow the canal into Camden Town and find a pub where they can warm up and grab an early dinner. You can't get more touristy than fish and chips, Joe points out with a wink. Nikki rolls his eyes but indulges him. The food is exactly as greasy and vinegary as one might expect. It's not bad, it's just, how can an empire colonize so many places, yet never pick up any cooking tips, he complains. It's honestly embarrassing. They think salt is a spice, have pity, Joe says, laughing. At least you can find decent curry in London. We should have gone for that instead. Next time, Joe promises, and Nikki has to quash the completely ridiculous flutter at the implication of a next time, because of course there would be a next time. They're friends, they hang out together on a weekly basis. It's just that this is the nicest date he's been on in longer than he cares to remember, and it's not even a date. Nikki is having a great deal of difficulty reminding himself of that fact, or remembering why it needs to stay this way. Just because of an unpacked they'd made on one tipsy night at the guard, surely that was not a binding agreement. They'd hardly even known each other then. Joe steals the last chip off Nikki's plate, laughing when Nikki tries to bat his hand away, his eyes warm and bright, and Nikki thinks, maybe next time. Nikki rings in New Year's Eve at the guard, of course, where else? Annie and Quinn are back by then, as is Niall. Booker has decided to lighten up on the alcohol for a while and toast them with ginger ale instead of champagne. Even Lycan makes an appearance, leaning on crutches with his whole leg from hip to toe swathed in a massive cast. But he's grinning as widely as ever, and clearly much improved. Only Joe is missing. And Nikki is briefly gutted until he remembers that he'd said he would be visiting family. All the same, it's a good night. Niall plants a sloppy kiss on Nikki's cheek right at midnight, giggling, and he admits to himself with a smile that he has high hopes for the new year. And then Joe returns to London with a new boyfriend. Those two facts are not quite related. It's not like Joe picked him up in the Netherlands and then carried him home. But they did have a very romantic style meet cute at Heathrow, both hailing the same cab and then deciding to share it instead. Joe tells the whole story to their group very charmingly over drinks the following Friday. Nikki smiles and laughs at all the right parts, and then excuses himself to the loo so that he can fall apart for a minute where no one will see. He knows he's being very stupid, but he would like just 1 minute to quietly mourn what might have been. He'd been this close to asking Joe out properly. Sure, there's a decent chance Joe would have turned him down. He certainly had a pride. But at least Nikki would have known he'd tried. This just feels deeply unfair. When he emerges from the stall, he finds Andy leaning casually against the sinks, arms folded across her chest. "This is the men's room," Nikki says, out of some kind of shock-based reflex. "It's technically an all-gender restroom. It's just the one that happens to have urinals," she retorts. "Are you done sulking yet?" Nikki sighs and elbows her aside so that he can wash his hands. "I'm not sulking." "You absolutely are. Quinn has been making puppy dog eyes at me behind Joe's back all night, and there's only so much of that shit I can take. Would you two get your acts together already? He's been on like one date with this guy. He's not marrying him. Man up and talk to him about it." "There's nothing to talk about," Nikki insists. "Joe is my friend. I'm glad he's found someone who seems to appreciate him." Andy's eyes narrow. "Is this about that stupid pride pact or whatever?" He wants to hit his head against the mirror repeatedly. "Quinn told you about that, huh?" "Yeah, shockingly enough. She's my wife and she tells me things, especially when it involves our friends being idiots. What was that really about, anyway?" Nikki hardly remembers anymore, honestly. "It was pride. We were drinking. I probably hit on him. He let me down gently, as is very much his right." "Drop it, Andy, please. He's clearly still not interested. I'll get over it." "If you say so," Andy says dubiously. It takes another 6 weeks or so, but eventually Joe does bring his new boyfriend around to meet them. His name is Thomas. He's blandly handsome, in an Etonian sort of way, and he's clearly too posh for the guard, but trying very hard to downplay it. To his credit, he seems nice enough, if a little boring. He works in finance, but waves it off as being too dull to be worth discussing, and has a great admiration for modern art. He isn't shitty to the bar staff, listens politely when other people are speaking, and stands around for the whole group without prompting. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him. "Oh my God, I can't stand him," Niall mutters when she and Nikki take their own turn to fetch drinks for the table upstairs. "How can someone as lively as Joe fall in with someone so dull?" "Be fair. He's only just met us," Nikki says, striving for objectivity. "Maybe we just need to get to know him better." Niall groans. "Do we have to, though?" Privately, Nikki agrees. He expects Joe and Thomas to go home together at the end of the night, but they kiss goodbye just outside the pub, and Thomas calls a cab alone. He's got a family thing tomorrow morning, Joe explains, seemingly unbothered by it, as they head for the tube as usual. And we're not quite at the meet the parents stage yet, you know? I thought you always jump into things too quickly, Nikki teases to cover his relief. Are you actually taking your time with this one? Joe smiles crookedly. After the last time, yeah, I thought I'd try playing it safe for a change. And Thomas is certainly that, Nikki does not say aloud. It's not until they're on the train that Joe finally says, I don't think the others like Thomas much, Quinn especially. She's probably being a little overprotective of you, that's all, Nikki says, trying to shrug it off. You should have seen her when Niall first introduced Dizzy to us all, back when they were dating. No one could possibly be good enough for our Niall. He smiles to himself, remembering Quinn's narrow-eyed disapproval, contrasting it with how comfortable Dizzy's presence behind the bar is now. They came around to her eventually. So what do you think of him, Nikki? Joe asks. Nikki should have known this was coming. He can't bring himself to lie to Joe, but he certainly can't tell him what he really thinks, which honestly has less to do with Thomas himself and more with his own inconvenient feelings. It doesn't matter what I think. Yes, it does, Joe says, quietly, but no less insistent for it. You matter to me. Your opinion matters. His brown eyes are intent on Nikki's, so warm and sincere, and Nikki's stomach does an awkward little flip. He swallows hard and tries to match Joe's sincerity with his own. I think that meeting someone's friends for the first time is not easy when you know you're being judged, he says, slowly, carefully. You don't always show the best side of yourself in that situation, but if he makes you happy, then it truly does not matter what any of us think. We will come to see him as you do in time. He breathes deeply, then adds, But if he doesn't, then he's not worth a single minute of your time. You deserve to be with someone who makes you happy, Joe. Joe just looks at him, and Nikki can't begin to read the expression on his face. When the silence stretches out a bit too long, the residual Catholic part of him that is a glutton for punishment prompts Nikki to ask, Does he make you happy? After another moment, Joe blinks rapidly a few times and finally looks away. He makes me feel interesting and attractive, he says. There's a note in his voice that sounds like he really is considering this carefully. And that's certainly a nice feeling. Nikki nods, hopefully in a supportive manner. You are definitely both of those things. So that sounds like a good place to start. Yeah, Joe murmurs, a start. He doesn't quite meet Nikki's eyes for the rest of the train ride, clearly lost in thought, which is just as well. Nikki's not sure he wants to know what Joe might see in his own expression right now. For all that they work for the same organization, Nikki doesn't actually see Joe in the office very often. Their departments aren't even on the same floor of the building, and there's very little overlap between them. International Affairs is a fairly insular bunch, the translators even more so. Nikki spends far more time on calls or Zoom meetings with their partners in other countries than he does with literally anyone else within their own offices. Well, he supposes he interacts with IT periodically, but that's about it. Apart from the quarterly staff meetings, there's not a whole lot of cross-pollination between the various departments. Quinn complains about that a lot, mostly because she's a few rungs higher on the ladder than Nikki or Niall, and therefore is the only one of them who gets stuck in development meetings every week. After one such meeting, she appears at Nikki's desk without warning and hands his coat to him. You need to fetch Joe out of here before he gets himself fired. Nikki blinks at her. What? Funder meeting, Quinn says crisply. Stephen Merrick just ripped apart his design for the new campaign in front of a bunch of department heads. He's wrong, by the way, but he's a major funder, so his wrongness is irrelevant. Joe pushed back. Merrick got pissy. It devolved from there. Merrick and Joe's boss are hashing it out in her office. She's got his back on this, but if Joe's still hanging around in this mood when they emerge, It will not go well for him. Please take him out for lunch or something until Merrick's gone. It's 3 p.m, Nikki points out, but he's already shrugging on his coat. Whatever. I'll make some excuse to your manager. Just go. He goes, doing his best to take the least circuitous route from his desk to Joe's, which involves skirting around half the perimeter of his floor and up an internal staircase and then back around to the other side of the building. So yeah, there's a reason he doesn't tend to run into Joe at the office. Marketing takes up an entire corner wing of their floor, and Joe's cubicle is right across from his boss's office. Her door is closed, and Nikki winces to hear the raised voices behind it. Joe is blatantly eavesdropping, leaning against his cubicle divider. One look at the thunderclouds gathering across Joe's face is enough to convince Nikki. Come on, he says, stepping directly in front of Joe, hands on his hips. Get your coat. We're getting coffee. Or possibly something stronger. Joe's eyebrows draw together in confusion, which is better than the anger that had been building there before. Nikki, what are you? Quinn told me about the meeting. Let's take a break. Nikki elbows past Joe to fetch his jacket, which is hanging haphazardly off the back of his chair. Here, you need anything else? No, but great, let's go. Nikki hesitates, then links his arm around Joe's and starts towing him gently away from the closed door. One of Joe's co-workers sees them and gives Nikki a quick thumbs up before ducking back to her own work. By the time they reach the elevator, Joe has reluctantly gotten with the program and donned his jacket, though he's clearly not happy about it. Merrick's a pretentious gas bag who doesn't know the first thing about marketing. Yes, I know, but you are not talking about it here. The elevator dings open and Nikki more or less manhandles him inside. Joe's head thunks back against the wall as they descend. I'm gonna get fired, aren't I? No, Nikki tells him firmly, because you are very good at your job and your boss believes in you and your work. So we are just gonna step away and let this nonsense blow over. It will be fine, I promise you. They end up in some hipster coffee shop a few blocks from the office. Nikki doesn't really want to encourage day drinking in Joe's current mood, especially since he doesn't normally drink much alcohol. Joe rants for a while over a succession of herbal teas, and Nikki lets him. It's always best to drain the poison from a wound first. It's just exhausting to deal with this level of bullshit, Joe sighs, when he's exercised the worst of it. There are tired lines drawn from his nose down to the corners of his mouth. Like, this isn't even my passion, you know? It's just a day job. Why do I let myself get so upset over a damn marketing campaign? Because you care, Nikki says simply. Your art is still art, even if it's not what you would prefer to be doing. Your work matters to you. Why did you choose this job in the first place? You could probably make twice the salary at some fancy marketing firm. Joe shrugs, staring down at his cup. Because I'd still like to keep some fragment of my soul intact, I guess. At least I know our organization is genuinely working to make the world a better place, and if I can play some small role in that. I try to tell myself it's worth it. I think it is. You're a good person, Joe. Fuck Merrick anyway. What does he know? That startles a laugh out of Joe, at least, and there's a little more warmth in his eyes when he looks back up at Nikki. Yeah, seriously. He glances down at his phone, frowning. Shit. I'm sorry to have ranted at you for so long. It's almost 5. Don't you need to get back to the office? Nikki gives him a small smile. Don't worry about it. Quinn's covering for me. Do you want another tea? Not really, but I could probably use something stronger now. All right, Nikki says, pushing back his chair. The guard? Joe hesitates, considering it. No, I'd kind of rather not have to deal with everyone else right now. I love them, but that's just not... No. Can we go someplace new? Sure. Whatever you'd like. Nikki pauses. If you'd rather be alone, I'd understand. No, Joe says at once. I didn't mean you. You're not everyone. Something tightens in Nikki's chest, tugging at him. I'm not? Of course not. Joe gives him that beautifully crooked smile. You're a Nikki. They find an old pub near the train station, with a booth tucked into a dark corner where no one will pay them the slightest bit of attention, and wind up staying there way too late for a weeknight, talking about nothing in particular. Nikki does ask at one point if Joe would like to invite his boyfriend to join them, but he just shrugs it off, saying that Thomas works with entitled assholes like Merrick all day every day, and Joe doesn't need that particular perspective right now. The night ends with Joe falling asleep on the tube, head on Nikki's shoulder. Nikki doesn't have the heart to wake him, so he waits until the last possible minute. Come on, let's get you home, he murmurs into Joe's ear, just as they pull into the station. Joe, wake up, it's your stop. Joe blinks owlishly up at him, but allows himself to be gently tugged up to his feet and off the train. Wait, he says, once they've emerged out onto the street. This is my station. Yes, I know, Nikki says wryly. But you missed yours. Don't worry. It's not too far out of my way. Can I walk you home? Joe pulls a face at him, but he keeps his arm linked with Nikki's, hand sneaking into the warm pocket of Nikki's coat. You really didn't have to. I'm fine. I know, Nikki says agreeably. But I'll feel better if I can see you home, okay? It takes him another 20 minutes to walk back to his own flat after dropping Joe off, but he doesn't mind at all. The night is clear and cold, and the wind feels good against his face. Joe's relationship putters along until the spring, and when it ends, it makes no tangible impact on any of their lives. He never did bring Thomas around to the guard again after that first meeting, so it's not like they had a chance to miss him. So what happened? Andy does ask. Joe shrugs. Nothing in particular. It just clearly wasn't going anywhere, that's all. Thank God, Niall says fervently. He was so boring, Joe, I can't begin to tell you. He was much more interesting in bed, Joe tells her with a wink. But yeah, that only gets you so far. That is definitely more information than Nikki ever needed to know about Thomas. But he can be magnanimous now that the man is an ex-boyfriend. So what are you looking for tonight? Booker asks, slinging a friendly arm across Joe's shoulders. A space to vent, a drink to drown your sorrows, or a warm body to replace him. Joe waggles his eyebrows. Are you offering, Book? No thanks, Booker says over Andy and Quinn's raucous laughter. But it's a gay bar. I'm sure we can find you someone. He grins across the table at Nikki. How about you, Nikki? Willing to take one for the team? Nikki's spine stiffens, and he refuses to so much as glance over at Joe, forcing himself to keep his tone appropriately dry. Yes, because it has always been my dream to be someone's rebound shag. Yeah, seriously, Booker, that's kind of gauche, Niall says, rolling her eyes. Anyway, these two won't hook up. They made a pride pact. All of Nikki's goodwill toward her evaporates instantly. Joe barks out a laugh, with a sharp glance in Nikki's direction. They know about that? Nikki groans, resting his head in his hands. In fairness, I was very tipsy when I told them, and I promise that I already regret all my life choices. What the hell is a pride pact? Booker asks, bemused. Quinn gestures disdainfully. They made some kind of agreement not to sleep together. Okay, but why exactly? Because meddlesome matchmakers like you kept trying to push us together without asking either of our opinions about it, Joe says lightly. When Nikki lifts his head enough to look at him properly, he's got a pleasant smile plastered on his face. It doesn't reach his eyes. Fortunately, we're much better off as friends. Right, Nikki? Right, Nikki agrees, struggling to match his smile. And see, Joe has already lasted much longer than any of the men I brought around to meet you lot. So it's worked out quite well. That's because Quinn scares off everyone's potential suitors. Niall laughs over Quinn's indignant protests. She kindly refrains from pointing out that it's been well over a year since Nikki last dated anyone at all. Remember when Dizzy first met her? Poor Thomas never stood a chance. That leads into a spirited discussion of everyone's least impressive exes, which carries them through the rest of the evening. Nikki begs off much earlier than usual, claiming exhaustion after a stressful work week, and isn't sure whether to be disappointed or relieved when Joe doesn't join him.